Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome back to the show. I'm Ben Bolin.
And I'm Scott Benjamin.
And Scott, today I think we should start with some listener mail if you're okay with it.
Seems like a good place to go.
All right. Now, these, we've got a couple here, and let's see if we can isolate the common theme. All right. Reza B. writes to us and says, "Hi, guys. I just listened to your top 10 cars of 2014, and you mentioned that the LaFerrari was the only hybrid car to compete with the Porsche 918 Spyder. However, I think that you have forgotten the incredible McLaren P1. It is from one of the smaller car companies, so your mistake was acceptable. Thanks for the great podcast."
Oh, thanks, Reza. It was acceptable.
Yeah. All right. Next, our buddy Alex, also known as Ziggyman Sod, writes in and says, "Hey, guys, good list for that episode." He's referring to the same podcast. "We missed a pretty important car, the McLaren P1. I'm not sure how you missed it because it competes directly with the Porsche 918. And, oh, man, what a car it is. Check it out. It is balls to the wall crazy." And you guys, we might have done a little bit of a move on you, a little bit of a bait and switch, because we were waiting to do this episode, the entire episode, dedicated to the McLaren P1.
That's a nice spin, Ben. And we've got all that information in front of us, so we're going to talk about it. Now, off the cuff, you know, we forgot to mention the P1, of course. We were talking about the 918. That just happens, I guess. I was just trying to think. I was lucky to come up with the LaFerrari, as a matter of fact, because, you know, my focus was on whatever car was next on our list, so I wasn't really thinking about the competitors to that vehicle at the time.
Yeah, I dropped the ball.
I'm just covering myself, really, at this point. But but we did have all the stuff that we're talking about for the McLaren P1 lined up and ready to go, and we've got it for you today. So, you know, fear not. There's plenty of information about the P1 coming right now.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing, amazing car, Ben.
Yeah, so just at the most basic level, you know what? I guess we have to let the cat out of the bag right now. At the most basic level, what is the McLaren P1? It is a limited production hybrid supercar.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I'm going to go ahead and say it. I don't know, Noel, I don't know if you have to censor me when I say it, but this car is badass.
It definitely is. I don't think you'll have to be censored for that, because it definitely is. This car is awesome, and it definitely holds its ground against the Porsche 918 Spyder and the LaFerrari that we've mentioned briefly, you know, on other podcasts as well. But
right.
We've got some specs, you know, some comparative specs that go along with this. I want to talk about what Top Gear thought of this thing, because Jeremy Clarkson drove the car and gave it a raving review. Just a wonderful car. I mean, some of the things that he says about it are really shocking.
Yeah, and can you catch us up with some of that stuff?
Yeah, you want to do it right now?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, so we'll get into the specs and all that stuff right now. But, I mean, as he walks us through this car, I mean, this will give you a little hint about what it's all about if you're not familiar with the P1. But
right.
I guess what strikes me most about this whole thing is that this is a pretty jaded guy. This is, you know, Jeremy Clarkson, he's driven a lot of cars. And I mean, a lot of cars,
right,
and the best that any manufacturer has to offer, right? So when, you know, Bugatti brings him a car, it's the factory prep car that's ready to go. It's the best Bugatti they've got on hand at Bugatti at the time. It's the best Ferrari they've got on hand at Ferrari at the time, or Porsche or whatever.
Yeah.
He drove a McLaren P1. I'm sure they did the same thing for McLaren. Mm-hmm. But he drove a McLaren P1. I think he was in Belgium when he did it, which may sound odd, but you'll figure it out in just a minute when I talk about where he test drove it at.
Right.
An incredible, incredible review of this car. I mean, and just to see it in action was really definitely worth it. So he says throughout this whole thing, he says it's almost like he calls it like science fiction almost, man, the way this thing is put together. He said that it's got extreme attention to detail. I mean, everything is thought about. And this reminded me a lot of like what we talked about in the Corvette. Mm-hmm. When we said every single gram has to fight its way onto that car.
It has to
be earned onto the car. It's the exact same thing with this, only he says this is maybe even beyond that. This is an incredible car. It has 324 cell lithium ion high density battery cells that run this thing. So it run the electric motor part of this thing, because there's an engine and a motor, of course, for a hybrid car. And the electric motor itself puts out 176 horsepower. So that's not bad for, you know, just the electric motor part of it. It's not, you know, supercar fast or anything by the way, but, the engine part of this, the gasoline engine, is a 3.8 liter twin turbo V8 that puts out 722 horsepower And that's for a grand total, because they work together, they work combined, right. 903 horsepower in the McLaren P1.
And this vehicle is a hybrid that is entirely performance related.
Yeah.
No. This is not a hybrid to save gas.
No. Money. And, you know, let's get this out of the way right now, because I was really kind of struggling over this, how to say this, because, you know, they're not in it. These supercar manufacturers like this are not in it for the eco benefits, right?
Oh, I know what you're going to say. Yeah, let's just say it.
They're using the best of both worlds, I guess. They're using the best, you know, the low end torque of the electric motors. They're using the power, I guess, of the gasoline engine, you know, 3.8 liter twin turbo, you know, the giant V8 engine. And they're mating them together, making them work together in different ways. Now for the Porsche and for the LaFerrari and the McLaren, they all use them in different manners. But the way that the McLaren uses it, it can go all electric. You know, it's able to drive in all electric mode, and he does that in this short video clip, this review. It's like a 15-minute review that I watched.
Yeah, yeah.
And he drives it in all electric mode, but the range is very, very slight.
The range is 6.2 miles for all our U.S. listeners. For everybody else, that is 10 kilometers.
Yeah.
That's right, 10 kilometers.
Yeah. But to be fair, you're not really driving this thing in electric mode ever, really. I mean, you can if you want to. I don't really see much benefit in doing that. And they point out that even, you know, with an engine and a motor working,
yeah,
it's putting out about the same, you know, carbon dioxide emissions as would like a regular family sedan.
Yep.
So it's not anything that's, you know, tremendously, you know, like an over output of CO2 or anything like that.
Right.
It's definitely cut way back because of this technology, but it's not also something that's going to be running, you know, slipping through the air as eco-friendly as like a Prius would be.
Right. Yeah.
Obviously.
And we'll have some fun comparing.
Yeah.
Prius
and now
McLaren.
Let me just kind of run through. Now,
yeah, yeah.
And I took just real quick notes as Top Gear went through this, and I'm going to do this quickly, and then we'll get through, you know, some more of the specs, I guess, that people want to hear about. But,
great.
Some of the observations that he made along the way were that it was comfortable, but it really didn't have any luxuries that you would think it would normally have. Like, there's no glove box. There's no carpets. The glass is thinner than glass would be on a normal car. Now, that's part of the racing car history, or the heritage, rather.
Yeah.
Normal cars, I think, they have something like 5-millimeter glass. This has like 3.5 millimeters thick glass all the way around. In the back, there are the pieces of glass that just aren't there. You know, they got blanking plates instead of glass because that's an additional weight it didn't need to carry.
Yeah.
They're so concerned about weight that they didn't put lacquer on the carbon fiber trim. So it's just raw carbon fiber, which you don't see anywhere really. Usually you see it lacquered and smoothed over. So,
right,
you know, it doesn't cut up your fingertips when you run them over it. But, and the reason for that was that it saves what they said was 1.5 kilograms of weight, which is about 3.3 pounds of weight over the whole vehicle. So that kind of attention to detail is what they're doing here. It has extremely light chassis, of course, and titanium trimming. So anything that, you know, would normally be any other kind of metal on the car would be titanium. So very lightweight,
yeah,
very strong. The body is made up of just 5 panels. So 5 exterior panels. And that means less glue, less body fasteners, things like that, nuts and bolts to hold the whole thing together. So again, less weight.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the Lotus principle of, you know, weight saving.
That's a very good comparison.
Yeah. I think that's the best way to compare it. And then despite the fact that it has, you know, a full engine, it also has an electric motor and a bank of batteries and all that, it still weighs less than what he said was the Vauxhall Astra. And I looked up Vauxhall Astra because here in the States we don't have Vauxhall brand.
Right.
But that's a small family car from Vauxhall Motors, which is a subsidiary of the General Motors brand from here in the United States. So,
yeah.
Again, just picture a small sedan. This car weighs less than that, and it's a big supercar.
Yeah, it weighs, I think we already gave the number, 3,075 pounds.
We didn't give that weight, but that is a relatively lightweight vehicle. I mean, when you talk about some of the other cars like the Porsche 918 Spyder, which comes in at like 3,691 pounds. So,
yeah,
you know, that's a full, that's
600 pounds.
That's 600 pounds heavier than the McLaren P1 for good reason too, because, you know, they do all this weight saving, technology, they've all wrapped up. So, you know, he says that it's economical, it's fast, and he says it's really fast, it's mind-blowingly fast. And this is where he gets into some of these comments that, you know, this is where the jaded character, you know, that he's driven so many cars and so many fantastic cars that anytime he says something like this, I get kind of excited about it because, you know, it sounds like,
right,
you know, it sounds like it's really, really making an impression on him.
Well, yeah, and he won't mince words.
No.
He doesn't.
No, so he tested it, and this is why he's in Belgium. He tested it at the Spa track, which is the Formula One track, of course. Very fast track.
Yeah.
Kind of a, wild track as far as F1 series goes, even. Said that it was really clever in the way this whole thing worked out. It adapts to the way you drive. It moves to suit the environment that the vehicle is in on its own. It does it, based on speed, based on how you're driving. This is what makes this car really incredible. As the speed goes up, the rear wing raises to generate downforce, of course, which is kind of understood, right? A lot of cars do that. Now, when you look at the rear wing on this thing, though, we're talking it goes way up.
Yeah.
It almost looks like it goes almost 2 feet in the air up. It goes way up like an F1 car would or something like that. But if you go past 156 miles per hour, the wing goes back down a little bit, and that's to make it a little slipperier. Is that the right way?
Make it
smoother through the air, I guess.
There we go.
It makes it flow through the air a little better.
Sure.
And it says that, above 156, that wing, that huge wing, is putting so much downforce on the rear wheels, because this is a rear-wheel drive car. It's not all-wheel drive. It's rear-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's putting so much downforce on the rear wheels that after 156, it would put so much pressure on there that the chassis would break. That's how much downforce this thing is putting on.
Wait, let's stop. Everybody think about that. So much downforce that it would break the car.
Yeah, the suspension, I said it's chassis, suspension would snap, right?
Yeah.
So, that's incredible. Now, the exhaust works with the rear diffuser to generate kind of an area of low pressure behind the vehicle, which pulls the back end of the car in as it drives.
Mm-hmm.
The wheels are military grade aluminum, which is, just kind of another interesting feature, which you won't really read about too often. The brake discs are made from a material that's only ever been used in the Ariane space program because of their heat resistance.
Right.
And,
yeah.
They're coated with something called silicon carbide, which is the hardest substance known to man. So this car it's over the top in the way this thing was engineered. It was it's overdone. It's redundant in the way things are done, but weight saving in every aspect.
And we have some good information about. Well, do you want to keep going with some Top Gear stuff? I've got some stuff.
I'm nearing the end, and then I'll let you have it. But we're talking about acceleration, and we'll talk exact numbers. But he does mention that from 0 to 160 miles per hour, this thing is faster than a VW Golf will go 0 to 60 miles per hour. That's how fast this car is. 0 to 160. Just contemplate that for just a moment. How quick that is. That's faster than some cars 0 to 60 time. And a Golf, that's not an exactly slow car by any means.
Right.
I mean, it's peppy, I guess.
It's got a little bit of zip.
And this is maybe the biggest thing, and this is what I'll wrap up with, because this is kind of the end, but this is maybe the thing that struck me the most. And again, he's driven so many cars, Ben. He says for years, cars have all been basically the same, but this really isn't. It's a game changer, a genuinely new chapter in the history of motoring is what he calls this car. That's how surprised he was by what he found when he got behind the wheel of this thing.
And he probably said exactly what the McLaren team was hoping for. Scott, this car was hand assembled by a top tier group of 61 engineers, the creme de la creme. And they were making one car a day. The first delivery took place in October of 2013. So if you think about it, this is not by any means an old thing. This is innovative. This is out the box. As you know, I can be pretty skeptical about hybrids, and I'm still not happy with that BMW that we talked about in that original episode. But this one is winning me over. And I think as we're going to find in this episode, let's do some stats and maybe talk about how this crazy thing became a real car.
Sure, we can do that. Now, if you want to talk about, where it came from, really, I guess?
Because, let's do that.
All right, well, it comes from McLaren Automotive, and you may be surprised to learn. Now, we talked about Bruce McLaren,
right.
who passed away in 1970 at testing.
At Goodwood.
Yeah, at the Goodwood House, or at the Goodwood Circuit, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think that Bruce McLaren was the founder of McLaren Automotive, but that's not the case. It's a guy by the name of Ron Dennis. And Ron Dennis, he's 66 now. He's the executive chairman of McLaren Automotive, Englishman. He was the team principal of McLaren Racing, the F1 team, until about 2009. I think he held that position for something like 29 years, Ben.
Wow.
He was the team principal from like 1980 until 2009. But he left to build streetcars with McLaren Automotive. And that was actually a continuation of the dream that Bruce McLaren had when he died in 1970, because he was working on a car called the McLaren M6 GT, which was kind of a road-going race car that he had, made into a road-going car. It's a race car that he had made into a street car.
It's like a barely street-legal race car.
Yeah, and he was driving this on the roads for some time, several months at least, before his death. Used it as a personal transportation, and it was kind of the prototype of these cars. And I think two of these cars were actually built. But his dream was to build production vehicles at one point, because he'd already done the race car thing. He'd been building and he'd started the McLaren race team and everything. And he decided, well, let's build a road going car and we'll try that next. And, this was his thing. And then when he died in 1970, that dream kind of, died with him. And then, it wasn't until much, much later when Ron Dennis picked it up again and said, well, let's make this thing a reality.
And if you'd like to hear some more about the McLaren story, just as a side note here, a little sidebar, go ahead and check out our earlier episode on the subject. Right?
Yeah, and this is not to discount the McLaren F1, which, it's its own topic, but that was another supercar from the past that we should talk about at some point in our history here. But the McLaren 1, that was, when was that? That was in the early 1990s. I think in 1992, I think, is when the F1 production began. And it was a real limited production as well, just kind of like the McLaren F1. Have we said how many P1s are going to be built?
I don't think we have specifically said. Is it 375?
375. Yeah, that's the limited production of the P1. So, if you see one of these things, it's going to be pretty rare. It's a rare bird, I guess.
Yeah. And here's another fun fact about this. They are sold out.
Yes.
The P1s are sold out. They are pre-ordered. And everybody who wanted to get one, that's not the right way to say it. Everyone who jumped on it has gotten one, but was first come, first serve. The only way that you will be able to get a P1 now, if you are not already on that very small, very short list, is if you buy a used one from the people who own them.
And that'll probably start happening soon, I would think. Now pricing, if you're not impressed enough already that they're only building 375, and some of the things that we mentioned.
Yeah.
Pricing is somewhere, if you want to go U.S. dollars, Ben, around $1.35 million. So that's the starting point. However, they do want to point out that I think it was something like a huge percentage of these things. And I don't want to state a percent. 75%, I think, have opted for some kind of level of unique customization to their McLaren P1 from, a place called McLaren Special Operations.
Right, yeah.
And so, that $1.35 million just isn't enough to spend on that car. They want to add, whatever type of luxury features, I don't know, ostrich leather or whatever they're going to add. I don't know what the options are. But
like one of those big airbrushed pictures of Mother Maria or something.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure that's what they would add, something like that. And that's going to cost them a little bit more. So the average price then goes up to something like $1.6 million. And I know that you mentioned that, they've already delivered a couple of cars. They've delivered some to the owners in the UK beginning in October of 2013.
Right, yep.
And they say that, soon enough they're going to be coming here to the United States. And they think that the United States is going to be the P1's biggest market. They can already say that because they know where they're going, right?
Right. Yeah. They allocated portions of the run of the production to different areas of the world. So, by August, McLaren already knew that they were sold out of the cars they intended for the Middle East, for Asia, and for, North and South America. And then by November of 2013, they were sold out in Europe as well. One thing we should note with the customization here, and this is a really neat thing. The people who purchase a McLaren are able to remotely watch its assembly. And, I was joking about having some gaudy airbrush picture on there, but you would probably be surprised, especially if you're not familiar with supercar customization, you would be surprised by the level of detail that's possible in this kind of customization.
Well, even in the standard production, I mean, I think people will be blown away by how clean the facilities are. I mean, it's like an operating room when they put these things together.
Yeah, it's like a clean room for NASA or something.
What is it? What do you say? 61 people, 61 engineers building one car a day.
Yeah.
So you got to imagine what that environment is going to be like. It's going to be remarkable. It's going to be clean. It's going to be precise. Everything's going to be exactly where it should be. You know, nothing's going to be left out at the end of the day. No tools in the workbench, that kind of thing. So I would love to go to the facility and see someone's car being built. That would be really cool.
Yeah. I wonder what the vetting process for that is.
Oh man.
Okay. So we know that yes, this is a little more expensive than your average Geo Metro, to put it in understatement of the year. But we also know that, this is worth it. Scott, I guess should we go into stats?
Yeah, there's so many things though. I mean, stats, it's a tricky game to play because once we start talking about that, then we want to talk about like the CURS system that it has on board and some of the F1 technology.
Yeah.
So let's do that. Let's just kind of laundry list this stuff and we'll see where it takes us. How about
okay,
that?
Okay. And, let's also not hesitate to compare it to the F1.
All right. Let's do that. So, it's rear wheel drive.
Right.
Has a 7-speed dual clutch transmission. It's a mid-engine design, of course, which we talked about. So it's just behind the driver's seat and passenger seat. The passenger enclosed in something called the mono cage, which is a safety cage concept.
Yep.
Carbon fiber monocoque and roof structure. So that's kind of like this all-encompassing carbon fiber tub, I guess, that you would be in.
Right.
Actually more than a tub, really. And it's not the same monocell that was used in the current, McLaren, the MP412C and the MP412C Spider. Which came out in early 2012. So it's not the same as the monocell. It's a different thing. It's a brand new thing called the mono cage. We mentioned that it has a twin turbo 3.8 liter V8 engine. Mm-hmm. And again, that 3.8 liter is not the same engine that's used in the McLaren MP412C. The only thing that it has that shares there is the displacement. It's a completely different engine.
Right. Yeah.
Something unique. And the horsepower out of this one, out of just the engine, is 727 horsepower. And the torque is something like 531 pound feet of torque just out of the engine. And when you combine that with the in-house, that's the other thing. This is an in-house developed electric motor. So it's their own McLaren brand motor, I guess. They're not sourcing that from
kind of
someone
proprietary.
Else.
Proprietary. That's smart.
Exactly. So that produces 176 horsepower, which I mentioned, and 192 pound-feet of torque. So anyways, the total output of this whole thing together, I mean, because it does work together in concert, 903 horsepower and 722 pound-feet of torque, which is, that's amazing.
So if we put this on the road, what that translates to is 0 to 62 miles per hour in under 3 seconds, 2.8 to be exact.
Yeah, which is faster than the McLaren F1.
That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, the hybrid P1 is a full 5.5 seconds faster than the F1.
Yeah, but 5.5 seconds faster. I think that's for the quarter mile time. But that's okay, because we're going to get to the quarter mile time, because I'll tell you the quarter mile time right now, and that'll make sense then.
Okay.
The standing quarter mile is something like 9.8 seconds at 152 miles per hour. Now that's pretty fast. I mean, that's faster than the F1, the McLaren F1, of course, the previous one.
Yeah.
You said five and a half seconds faster. That's faster than the Bugatti Veyron, which does it at 10.5 seconds at 140 miles per hour. So, again, this thing is a world-class supercar, really. It's a hybrid, which is strange. I mean, you know, this whole thing with the new hybrid supercars is all strange to me. The 918, the LaFerrari, the P1.
Yeah.
It's all a little bit weird, but, you know, I'm beginning to be won over by these things, by this group, I guess. Not the standard sedans, you know, the coupes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not so much those yet, but, the supercar hybrid versions, they're pretty cool. They've got their benefits.
Yeah. And I think that we are learning a lot about the potential of hybrids, mm-hmm. because whenever there's a new innovation, I always think that we have to go through quite a few iterations mm-hmm. that are far from perfect. But it's all a learning process. And speaking of learning, Scott, I wanted to ask you, cool. And speaking of flawless segues, let's go back to
Let's talk about times a little bit more, because you had mentioned, you know, the 0 to 62. They always do 0 to 62 in Europe. So that's 100 kilometers per hour, and that's why they do that.
Let's talk about braking time.
We'll do that too. Yeah. But 0 to 62 in 2.8 seconds. So we're talking like motorcycle faster, Ben, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I know their motorcycle's faster, I know, but this is a huge car. It's a almost 3,100-pound car that's going 0 to 60 in 2.8 seconds. Then it's 0 to 124 miles per hour in 6.8 seconds. That's, okay, just to be honest, that's a fast 0 to 60 time for most cars.
Right.
6.8 seconds.
Yeah.
0 to 186 miles per hour in just 16.5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. So, but you'll have to be able to stop that as well.
Ah, yes. It takes only 6.2 seconds to completely brake from 186 miles per hour.
Oh, wow.
During that time, you will cover about 246 meters.
So, okay, so let's see. That would be 16. Okay, so it takes 16.5 seconds to get up to 186,
mm-hmm.
and then it takes 6.2 seconds to brake from 186 down to zero. So what's that? That's 22.7 seconds.
So under a minute.
22.7 seconds to get from get from zero to 186 down to zero again.
Yeah,
that,
how long does it take for your heart rate to go back to normal?
This reminds me of the old, like, you know, the test that they would do with the Cobra all the time, the 0 to 100 to 0 thing.
But
this goes up to 186 and back down to 0 again in 22.7 seconds.
Yeah, in fact, the top speed of the P1 is 217 miles per hour, 350 kilometers. However, it could go faster, but it is electronically limited by the manufacturer.
Yeah, that's so it doesn't damage itself. We've talked about speed limiters before, right?
I think
we have, right? And it's got these, okay, this is a good time to talk about some of these F1-derived features that I think we should mention.
Oh, yeah, good call.
It has something called Instant Power Assist System. And this is a, what I'll talk about is there are two buttons on the steering wheel. The iPass button, which is Instant Power Assist, is one of them on the right-hand side, I believe. And it gives an instant boost in acceleration via the electric motor. So it stores up all this energy, allows you to kind of unleash some power that had been stored up in the electric motor. And then there's also this drag reduction system, which is, they call it DRS, and that's on the left-hand side. You use it with your left thumb, I guess. It's a blue button, and that operates the car's rear wing, and that increases straight-line speed depending on how you use it. I mean, it's this huge rear wing that you can activate or deactivate. Pretty impressive either way. And the iPass and DRS are operated via push buttons that we mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also has this, it's this thing that kind of continually operates, I guess. And it's the same system they use in F1 called the KERS system. And KERS is something that you'll hear mentioned when you talk about the, LaFerrari and also in the 918 Spyder, I believe. And, they're all kind of using this new technology, but it's not new, brand new, but, what that does is it recovers the moving vehicle's kinetic energy under braking and it stores it in a reservoir. And it's not exactly like regenerative braking, which we hear about in, you know, smaller cars like the Toyota Prius and the Nissan Leaf and all
right.
those vehicles.
But it's a similar idea.
It's a similar idea, but it stores this energy in a flywheel or in batteries for later use under acceleration only. So it's not just storing up, you know, like in a general fund, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, for this power, it's like this is used for acceleration only.
Yeah, it's a dedicated fund there. You know what, Scott? There's one thing we do have to mention, and that is that the P1, as nice as it sounds, is not perfect.
What do you mean?
Well, there are people who have some quibbles with this. A lot of it comes back to the styling. Hmm. You know, styling, of course, is subjective, but the reviews say it's not an instant hit. Most people say the LaFerrari. A lot of reviews say the LaFerrari is a more handsome car.
I get that.
People think that it's got I think part of it is the lack of lacquer. But people say that it looks awkward. It looks like a fiberglass kit car.
The lack of lacquer. I like that. Yeah, I understand that. It looks a little raw, right? It looks a little unfinished to them, maybe.
Yeah.
But that in a lot of cases, as we said, was for weight savings. And they do everything for a reason on this car. Now, the LaFerrari, I mean, is a very finely crafted, well put together vehicle by Ferrari, rather. And I understand that, you know, people love the feel, the look, the power, the passion of Ferrari. You know,
right,
that's what it's all about. I mean, the sounds and everything. But the LaFerrari, that's in a different class of hybrid vehicles, I guess, if you want to put it this way, because it can't drive on all electric power like the P1 can.
Very good.
I don't know if a lot of people know that, even though it's a hybrid. This is one that's, you know, strictly gasoline powered, as far as the wheels are concerned, it can't run off of electric power alone. There's an onboard motor, of course, that we talked about. And I think we have mentioned, haven't we? I don't know if we have or not. Maybe we haven't. But, there's one electric motor on the LaFerrari chassis as well, but it doesn't drive the wheels like it does in the P1 or on the Porsche 918 Spyder, mm-hmm. because that one can also drive in all electric mode. Ferrari says outright, we're not going to make a car that drives all electric. We just don't do that.
And, you know, I respect that decision because, you have to be conscious of the idea of brand dilution, you
sure.
know, and specialization.
Yeah, I get it too.
So, in a response to people's beef with the styling of the P1, McLaren has this great website. And this thing is like a movie. I think it's designed by air.com. And this shows that this is meant to show their emphasis on aerodynamics and the weight savings. So you can actually look at a virtual model of a P1 and see where the air currents cut in and why they have, you know, the weird snorkel stuff and the air intakes and why the rear of the vehicle is designed the way it is. And it sold me on that.
So it explains away a lot of the reasons why people might have a problem with it. They may say like, well, that back end just doesn't look right to me. But they can show you this is why it looks that way because it's,
yeah.
What is it? Form over function.
Function over form.
I always get those backwards. Is that right? Anyways.
Yeah. It's function over form.
Let's let it go with that and we'll just say it. So you understand what I mean though, right? I mean, they show you why it works and you can kind of play around with that thing, right? Cause I saw you on your desktop messing with that and it looked really cool. It looked like a neat simulation almost, like a simulator that you were driving almost.
Right. Yeah. And it's very strange that counts as work research. Now, one thing I do have to correct myself on is that earlier I said 61 engineers, but I found a couple of different numbers there because I also found a review that said there were 82 engineers working on this and that it took them more time. So, just keep in mind that there might be a little bit of a variance
either,
in that number.
Either way, it's a hand-built sports car that, roughly put together in a day, and you can go watch it yourself. You can watch it being put together if you're lucky enough to be able to buy one of these things.
Uh-huh.
If you've worked hard enough to be able to do something like that. Now that leads me to, and I'm going to ask you this later.
Okay.
Not right now. This will be like my last question, but try to remind me about that later. You know, the whole thing with, you know, once you own a vehicle like this,
okay.
And I'll try to remember too. But I also want to talk about the press coverage, and then maybe just a little bit about the Nürburgring because there's some intrigue going on there with that, and a little bit of pushing going on, you know, a little chest puffery going on between Porsche and Ferrari and McLaren right now at the Nürburgring.
Oh yeah, okay, a little bit of huffing and puffing.
Little bit in Germany, yeah. So the press coverage as far as the first public appearance. It was shown at the 2013 Goodwood Festival of Speed for the very first time in motion. You know, a lot of people saw it, you know, at an auto show maybe, or they saw it, because I think it was revealed, I had this somewhere. Was it
in Geneva?
Yeah, Geneva. Do you remember the year? 2013 Geneva Motor Show.
Yeah.
Around March. But then later that year, that same year, and when is Goodwood held? In June?
Yeah, Goodwood is in June, typically.
Late June, early July, something
right,
like
yeah.
that. Okay. So they had the first public showing of the P1 and kind of drove it up the hill, I guess. And it was driven by Formula One driver Jenson Button,
mm-hmm.
Who drove a black P1 up the hill. And it was the first time the public had ever seen this car being driven live. So it was kind of a big deal. And there were three P1s present at Goodwood that day. There was an identical black vehicle that they didn't use. And I guess it's a backup in case something went wrong, right?
And then there was that yellow one, which is just sitting there to look pretty.
Exactly. Yeah. So they had a good showing at Goodwood, I guess, you know, to be able to bring out three vehicles of, you know, the type that I'm sure people were all over it, you know, because this is the type of vehicle that people don't really get to see in person hardly ever.
Right. Yeah. I think we already said it at the top. Yeah. You did say it at the top that if you see one of these puppies, take a photo if you can.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're driving by and you see one parked, pull over and send the photo to me because I would love to have it.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, it's going to be a rare sighting, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to see one here in Atlanta somewhere because we end up with a lot of exotics here.
We do.
And I'll tell you, you know what? I haven't even said this, but I drive past on one of my back routes, I guess, to avoid some Atlanta traffic. I go down a smaller road in Atlanta here, and I drive right past a Lamborghini dealer. And the parking lot, of course, it has Lamborghini, Lotus, Aston Martin, Spyker. It has all these amazing cars, okay. Right? And they're all parked outside. They're all, you know, right out there for you to see. Mm-hmm. McLaren has been, the McLaren vehicles have been showing up on the property. Now, there have been, and I've seen a few in traffic. I've seen, like, the McLaren, what is it, the MP412C? I've seen a few of those on the streets now. So I know that they're coming from that dealership.
Wow.
And there, and there's at least three or four parked at the dealership. But I haven't had the guts to really pull in there yet and see if there's a P1. I doubt it because, you know, they're so, so rare.
I don't think there would be in a dealership.
But also, I don't like to pull into there on a weekday when they're open in my, you know, beat up Honda Civic either. You know, because they know I'm not there to buy a car, obviously. I do like to park, you know, in a lot next door and walk over on the weekend when it's all chained up and everything.
Right, just to check it out.
Just to kind of walk through the lot and check out what's there, yeah.
Wow.
Amazing. Like brand new cars, used cars, but the McLarens are there. I'm going to go check out the MP412C soon.
Yeah. Oh, man. Will you take some pictures?
I wish I could drive it, Ben, but there's just no way. There's no chance. I'm sure the credit check is difficult enough to get through.
So yeah. Let's rent tuxes. Just go with me here. I've got a cane sword. If you can get a monocle and we can hook up some top hats.
We'll look like the guys in Dumb and Dumber.
Well, we'll do accents though. It'll be.
Oh, well, that's much more classy. I'm sure
we'll
that'll
do British accents.
That'll work out perfect. I don't know if there was any more about the press that I wanted to mention. Do you have anything else about the press before?
I think we should dive into the intrigue, my friend.
All right. The Nürburgring.
Yes, sir.
And, there's some, I don't know, some talking going on about what's happened at the Nürburgring recently.
Oh yeah, because... here, I'll set it up.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So McLaren announced, that they had done a lap in less than 7 minutes. And they said their average stated speed was, a little bit over 111 miles per hour.
Okay.
But they didn't say the exact time.
Mm-hmm. And that's because the Porsche 918 Spyder has lapped the Nürburgring in 6 minutes and 57 seconds. So that's just under 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is one of their direct competitors, the Porsche 918 Spyder that we mentioned. That's an, you know, $845,000 supercar hybrid again, you know, the all-wheel drive plug-in hybrid.
Right.
Ferrari has also done a test like this. I don't know if they've actually gone and run their test yet or not. I think they have.
They haven't announced it.
Now, see, this is the weird part. Okay, so LaFerrari has done it. Porsche has done it, and they've stated their time. 6 minutes, 57 seconds. LaFerrari has done it. They haven't stated their time. McLaren has done it. They haven't stated their time. But McLaren knows that Ferrari is going to announce this soon. They know they're going to announce their Nürburgring time. And what I think they're doing is they're just waiting to just completely blow it out of the water as soon as it happens. Because why else would they be holding on to the number?
Right. I think it's going to be pretty close, but still, I don't know, man. And we have to emphasize, the importance of having this kind of lap time at the Nürburgring, because this is something that becomes a huge selling point for your vehicle if you are the fastest.
Exactly. It's the best bragging rights that are out there right now.
Best advertising.
It really is. And I mean, and there's like the Texas Mile that you can talk about.
Right.
There's other competitions that you can run in that say, you know, like, well, this car is really fantastic for this reason. Straight out speed,
mm-hmm.
You know, straight line speed, the fastest 0 to 60, that type of thing. The one lap of the Nürburgring has just seems to be like today's test. You know, that's the way that everybody measures themselves against one another, and they're no different in any way. I mean, there have been some speculation. There's some unofficial reports that a time of like 6 minutes and 47 seconds has been possible for this thing. So that's a full 10 seconds faster than the Porsche 918 Spyder, which is no slouch, by the way.
That's
a fast car. So I'm guessing that the LaFerrari is going to fall somewhere between 647 and 657, because I think they're going to best the Porsche time. But I just don't know where McLaren falls in this. If they're going to be much lower than that, or, you know, how it's going to all play out. So we're going to see that soon. And if you want to get just a quick idea of how fast this thing goes around the track, I mean, you can watch a YouTube video that I've kind of watched a few times now.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty amazing. It's actually one of these things that, like, they kind of lull you into sleep with the soft music and this narration.
And then they
just shock you with the motor sound, and, you know, it's startling. The video is called McLaren P1 versus the Nürburgring Nordschleife. And that's the old pronunciation. You can just search McLaren P1 versus the Nürburgring and it'll come up. But, it'll show you not the complete lap, but some of the lap. and some of the prep that goes into getting on the course and this real dramatic narration. It's really a well put together short film, really.
Yeah.
It's only a couple minutes long, but it'll give you an idea of what this car looks and sounds like on the track.
Mm-hmm. And it is worth your time. Just do be aware of the change in volume there.
Yeah, exactly.
Now I've got, let's see, we've got one other thing. I have one totally irrelevant thing that I want to point out.
Irrelevant. We'll see.
Okay. Now you've heard people say that they cut all of the niceties out of the McLaren P1. However, Scott, that is not completely true. There are two cup holders.
Two cup holders. No kidding.
They're also carbon fiber.
I never would have guessed that there were cup holders in that car.
Well, you know, sometimes when you're driving, you want to make sure that you have your, you know, your Slurpee or your...
I just can't believe it.
Okay. My problem with that is that why would you ever put food or drink in this vehicle?
That's one thing. Yeah, sure.
That's the huge thing to me.
Sure. Or be distracted by a drink that you're trying to slurp down while you're going 186 miles an hour or something.
Right. Yeah.
But not that you would be doing that, but you know what I mean? It's definitely not the place to have a food and beverage, I wouldn't think. But,
right. Yeah.
Well, that's amazing, Ben. I hadn't read that anywhere that it has two cup holders now, but it doesn't have a glove box and no carpets.
Right, yeah.
And thin glass
and unlacquered carbon fiber. Does have HVAC though.
But it does have room for your big gulp.
Well, yeah, you gotta have your big gulp if you're in your P1.
And a beef jerky holder.
That's what the other one is.
Looks like a vase, but it's a beef jerky holder. All right, so, you know, I think I don't know if there's other things. I had a couple of questions, actually, that I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, you had, you said one that we really couldn't forget.
Well, the first one, and I'm kind of eliminating this one, but I'll tell you what it was just because I've kind of talked myself out of this one.
Okay.
And I initially wrote this down when we first started digging into this car, and I was wondering if you think it's just, you know, by making this a hybrid car instead of just an outright supercar, you know, if they had just stuck with the gasoline engine versus adding the hybrid technology to it, do you think that by adding that technology, they're just adding complexity to an already complex vehicle? Because supercars are complex to begin with. I mean, they're not anything that's mass produced, obviously. I mean, it's something that's it's difficult to put together, and everything is well thought out, extremely well thought out. Mm-hmm. But it's just adding too much complexity. And I think after that Top Gear review that I watched, I realized that I don't know. It seems like an absurd question now because it's not that it's too complex. They did it for a reason. I mean, this thing works together so well and it works so perfectly in that, you know, the electric motor, it fills in the gaps of the gasoline engine when it's not at its peak performance. The electric motor is taking over. So it's not like a typical hybrid in that case, you know, where it's just kind of laying in wait. This thing is actively helping along the way. So when you're shifting and in between gears, the electric motor's kicking in to help keep the speed up and keep the revs up and keep it, you know, it's just helping you in all these different ways.
Well, I think I see what you're saying because it's a cohesive whole.
Yeah.
It's not an electric motor shoehorned into a car.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean,
I think you answered your question.
Well, I did. I got away from that one thinking that maybe that's kind of silly to think of it that way. And why else would, you know, Porsche and Ferrari be doing the same thing? I mean, obviously they're in competition with each other. They're not doing it to create an eco-friendly vehicle.
Right.
By any means. They're really doing it because this is the latest and greatest technology and they can take advantage of that technology.
Okay. Yeah. I think you've answered it better than I could have. So.
Well, I don't know. I talked myself out of that one really in a lot of ways.
So what's the last question here?
All right. And this is the final thing that I want to kind of wrap up with. And I want you to think about this and I want our listeners to think about this.
Okay. So I don't have to answer right away?
No, not really. Okay. But I wonder if now this is a special car. I mean, 375 in the whole world. There's going to be far more, you know, Porsche 918s produced. There are going to be 918 of those. And the LaFerrari, there's going to be 499 of those.
Right.
There's going to be 375 of these. But I wonder if owning a car like this, something's limited edition, you know, whether it's one of those three or not, does something like this become an all-consuming effort for the owner? I mean, does it become something that you can only think about, while you're awake, you know, and while you're sleeping, that, you know, it's constantly on your mind. Like, you know, where is my car now? Am I really getting 903 horsepower out of it? What am I going to do to it next? You know, you're worried about where it's parked. You're worried about, you know, who's looking at it right now? Are they, you know, touching the windows or whatever?
Right.
I mean, is it something that you would be concerned about, like, while you're sleeping, like where it's parked, if it's safe? When you're driving it, are you going to be worried about people bumping into you? Because that happens in traffic. You know, I've been bumped into a few times.
You can swap paint.
Imagine if you were in a million-dollar car, what would happen?
Man.
So,
yeah.
You know, before you own it and even maybe, well, of course, during, but even maybe after you own it, would you think about this car all the time? Is it something that would just be kind of all-consuming to you? Because I think about my project car. I think about my daily driver a lot,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of silly, but I think about repairs I have to make. I think about my drive home, you know, like, maybe I better check the tire pressure. I know I'm going to need gas and things like that. It's mundane things. And in this car, I would think you would think about like, well, I got to take it in for service because they told me after 500 miles, I have to bring it back to the McLaren dealer for a $1,500 service, you know, where they check the tires and make sure that, you know, my $8,000 rims are still straight and plumb and everything and make sure that all that's correct. And I think that this thing would be so heavy on your mind that you would maybe only think about that.
I see what you're saying, kind of a ring of power thing, like in Tolkien.
I don't know, maybe.
It becomes your precious.
Yeah.
So that is a great question. And what do you think, or if you are listening and you own a rare vehicle yourself, do you find yourself in the same situation? Is your concern for your car increased by an order of magnitude?
Yeah. Am I overthinking it, or is this just something like, you know, if you're buying something like this, that's probably a drop in the bucket, you know, as far as your checkbook is concerned.
I don't know. Maybe.
So,
maybe not.
So maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's a throwaway. You know, even at that point, it's something to show up to a party in and show off a little bit, and that's it.
Well, we are going to find out. I'm going to take some time and think about this before I answer it in full. And listeners, we'd like you to do the same thing. So let us know if you think that owning a supercar like this would make you crazy obsessive. And you can tell us about this on Facebook and Twitter. Check out our website, carstuffshow.com, and you can write an email with your answer to this question directly. Our email address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.